Hey, everybody. We're back with another commissioned podcast. This is a community commission, which meant several commissioners came together to sponsor it. It's the 2010 Martin Scorsese film starring Leonardo DiCaprio, psychological thriller, I guess you'd call it, Shutter Island. This was my second time seeing this, but I didn't see this for probably 7 years because I saw it once. I think the spring or the summer after it came out in the theaters the first time, and I remember having a lot of thoughts about it and wanting to get back and see it again, but then I never did. I think I spent all my rewatches on Inception that year.
That was the same year as Inception?
Yeah.
Wow.
Big year for Leo.
It was crazy to me to go look at IMDb and see that this was made in 2010 because if you would have pressed me and asked me when this movie was made, I would have said
I was
mid to early 2000s.
Yeah,
It feels like it's been a decade since I've seen it, at least,
if
not a decade and a half. But I guess it's only been 7 years. I'm like you. I saw it once, very close to when it came out, and then this is my second viewing.
Yeah, and it's interesting. So like the thing. I remember the film's rep, if I remember correctly at the time, was that it's a good movie, but it's not like one of Martin Scorsese's best.
Okay.
And I kind of wanted to see it for myself, and I thought, oh, there's a lot going on here, and I need to see it again, but I never did. I watched, watching again, I didn't remember everything from the first time I saw it, but I felt like I understand this film completely. And I kind of agree that this is an above, I don't even say above average. This is a solid Martin Scorsese film with some excellent performances by Leonardo DiCaprio. Ben Kingsley playing another kind of menacing in a very subtle way type.
But good guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. Like, he has a vibe about him, which I think works in his favor in this movie to make you think he's worse than he is.
Yeah,
but it's interesting what happens there.
Yeah, and by looking around the internet, it seems like there's still some people that don't, I don't know how many times you have to see it to kind of get the twist, unless you just like cheat and look on the internet.
I think the answer is two,
because
I'm like you. I feel exactly like Inception is a perfect comparison. Regardless of what you think about the very very end of that movie, I feel like the second viewing, you totally understand what all the logistics of it are, you know?
And they're weird bookends to each other, because Inception's about a man whose wife goes insane and he loses his family decides ultimately to reject the fantasy and live. And Shutter Island, in my opinion, is about a man who struggles with the same issues and decides at the end that it's not worth it and I'm going to check out.
Yeah.
I'm going to volunteer for tribute.
Yeah, that's the thing. I guess we're going to talk about the ending because it's the most important part of the movie by far.
I don't want to jump right into that. And in fact, I also want to give credit where credit's due. These are the commissioners that made this podcast possible. Ty, Anne from Cali, Portman, Shinson 90, Space Dog 128, Andrew T, V Westervelt, Moni 6626. Majakina 66, Laura KM, Bet Americ, the infamous Coco 2 MC, LSB GOL, LSB Golf 77. Okay.
All right.
Not a lot of people took me up on the offer to give their real names for credit. So I had to do my best with their screen names. It's funny because the other thing is, like, in the last 7 years, I feel like my knowledge of cinema and how much I've seen has, like, greatly increased. So, like, last time I seen this, I had seen very few Stanley Kubrick films. And I felt like the first 5 minutes or so of this owes a lot to Stanley Kubrick style, or even specifically The Shining, where they just use this overpowering music in this oppressive location to kind of set the mood for you right away.
Yeah, the terrain is foreboding, the music is foreboding, the weather is foreboding. Everything about the opening to middle of this movie is foreboding.
And also, there's just a lot of things that just don't feel right in the film. Like, I remember the first time watching this when the people step off the boat, and the mental institutions all like, oh, you have to surrender your firearms, and you have to, yeah. And I'm like, what? I'm with Leo. Like, you're fucking federal. You're U.S. Marshals.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about an escaped convict. You have absolute jurisdiction. Get the F out of here with this crap. It was so insane. And then there's like a random scene of a cigarette smoking backwards and a weird scene where a woman's got a glass of water and then doesn't.
It's not really there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just the way that the guards are all looking at Leonardo DiCaprio, mm-hmm. at Andrew. Throughout this, you can tell that something is off here.
Yeah.
And the movie tries to pass it off as if they have a secret to guard, which they do. It's just not the secret that Andrew thinks it is, or should I say Edward.
And it's funny because all the meaningful glances and anxiety and the, like, furtive, like when he's getting close to the quote-unquote truth, like there's mm-hmm. like a palpable charge in the air. All that stuff makes so much more sense on a second.
It almost seems heavy-handed to me in a way. Like having... So it's been 7 years since I've seen this movie, and on second viewing, I didn't know exactly who Leonardo DiCaprio was supposed to be during this. I knew that he was an inmate or a patient, depending on your view of this place.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't sure exactly who he was, but it felt very heavy-handed, saying something is very wrong here, and it's not necessarily the secret they're hiding.
Yeah. Do you think – so when you say heavy-handed, is it – because –
I mean, they almost tipped their hat too much, in my opinion.
So, like, do you compare it to, like, The Sixth Sense, which I think is the ultimate example of a movie that is extremely rewarding to watch it unspoiled,
mm-hmm.
but then almost equally as rewarding to go back and see, like, and actually watch and see, like, you know, the magician moving its hands and the sleight of hand and, like, oh, yeah, they actually played it straight. Everything mm-hmm. was right there. You just didn't put it all together until the very end.
Yeah.
Would you say that this compares favorably or unfavorably to that?
Because
when you say heavy-handed,
it's roughly the same. I mean, I guess.
Would you say that M. Night Shyamalan was heavy-handed in The Sixth Sense, or?
Well, it's been a very long time since I've seen that, so I don't really know. But
yeah, I just saw it last Halloween. I went on a scary movie binge.
Yeah, I would imagine that that's probably true of any movie like this, where once you know the conclusion, seeing it unfold is, you know, somewhat rewarding, but also very obvious.
I mean, that's how it's curious because that's how I felt about Inception, too. Like, the first time I saw that movie, I'm like, man, I bet I could watch this a dozen times.
Uh-huh.
And then you watch it a second time, like, I've tested my hypothesis and it's true and I'm. And I feel the same way about, like, Memento.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love that film. I've seen it probably half a dozen times, but it's not a movie that I think rewards, like, just obsessive rewatching, like the way a Godfather would or the way, I don't know, like, you know, I always go to Godfather because it's the one I watch the fucking most. But, So I don't know what that says about the film because a lot of these psychological thriller puzzle films – plot twist films have that same kind of defect as once you solve it, it's like a, you know, how many times you put together a 500 piece puzzle and then like, hey, I'm going to scramble it all up and put it together again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure some people do. I'm not one of those people.
Yeah. You know, maybe a watch every 10 to 15 years works out in favor of this movie. But I do think it did set the mood and set up an interesting mystery, at the very least, in a first-time viewing. It does keep you engaged, I think.
Well, in the first time, like, all the evidence points to this big cover-up, and they're trying to bamboozle him, and they're trying to rope him in and make him disappear.
Yeah.
And they got the flashbacks to the concentration camp, and you can see how, like, they're preying on his fragile mental state and his post-traumatic stress. And then the second time you watch it, you see, like, how much that's all in his head.
Yeah, no, it's super interesting, this theme of violence, I guess, is running through the movie, right?
Yeah, men of violence.
Yeah, this warden who, that's the guy who plays...
Max von Sydow, right?
No, the other guy, the warden. That's Bill. That's
you talking about Ben Kingsley?
Nope. Okay. The other guy, the guy in the military out with the guard outfit.
Oh,
who drives him
yes,
in the Jeep.
Yes. Buffalo Bill.
Buffalo Bill. Thank you.
It's not his real name, but yeah.
Yeah. He plays him.
Uh huh.
You're
a great big violent person.
But yeah, he talks about the violence, and somewhere along the way, Andrew slash Edward has concocted this story about experimentation, right? Uh-huh. The experimentation that they're doing on people, which is not entirely a story because
right.
it seems like that's what happens to him at the end.
Sure.
But he says something about how, you know, he saw the experimentation that happened over that the Nazis were doing in the war, right? Mm-hmm. And then when he saw it at home, he couldn't tolerate it.
Right. Gives him a noble mission to be on.
Yeah, and you get the impression that the same was true with the violence that he saw, right? Mm-hmm. He saw, you know, the massacre of all these people over there, and then when he comes home, well, now his wife has done the same thing to their children, and he, mm-hmm. I think that just broke him, right? Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it's all
which,
tied
by
in
the
with
way,
his stress. And his...
Leonardo DiCaprio wading into that pond with his dead children was fucking stunning.
Yeah. Now that guy,
like every
kills
once in a while, he just opens it up, and
yeah.
you just. I forget that like it's just enough time goes by between lead that I start to kind of like underestimate him.
Yeah,
like, you know, he's just a pretty boy.
Really,
and he's fucking around
yeah.
with models 13 at a time in his private yacht, and then he does shit like that, and it's incredible.
Yeah,
like it. I wasn't particularly emotionally engaged with this character. The movie is much more cerebral, but like in the span of 15 seconds, it instantly made that connection.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a performer.
Yeah. He's a great actor.
And a decent director too. Martin Scorsese.
Yeah,
he's all right.
Pretty good. He's okay.
He has his days.
That's the thing. I have seen countless movies with, you know, Martin Scorsese at the helm and Leonardo DiCaprio bringing the thunder. And
like they've,
every
they got
time
a trilogy
they nail
now,
it.
Right? It's
The Aviator is one, which I love.
Right, this Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street, yeah.
I don't know if they've done any others, but that's a pretty good body. Because I think all of those movies are, well, Shutter
oh,
Island.
The Departed. They also
oh,
did.
Right, yeah. Departed. So I don't know if I could say The Departed is watchable. I don't think Shutter Island is watchable. In fact, I kind of don't want to see it ever again. Like,
uh-huh.
I don't think I need to see it again, or at least for another decade.
Oh,
but
Gangs
Wolf
of New York?
Wolf of Wall Street. Whoa, he... Oh, that's right. He was in that, too.
Yeah, he sure was.
Okay, so they've been working together for a long time.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like Wolf of Wall Street and The Aviator are something that I can... It doesn't matter... You know, if I'm 10 minutes, an hour, 90 minutes into the movie, if I come across that on cable, it's like, yeah, sure. Cleaning out the garage can wait.
This is probably the best thing that will happen to me today. So
yeah.
Let's do it.
Buckle, yeah. I'm in the mood for this.
Yeah.
I will say that the one thing that stuck with me as really heavy-handed is Max von Sydow's psychoanalyst of the guy. Like when he comes in under the guise of a U.S. marshal, and this Max von Sydow the psychologist guy just tears. It's like, what mm-hmm. the hell? Like
oh,
you, this guy's
good
been a,
defense mechanisms.
This guy's been a patient here for years. He's got the book on him. Like
yeah.
this isn't very impressive. It's kind of in context of the rest of the movie, shitty.
I feel like what was happening there is he was a guest psychologist and observing this guy for the first time, maybe.
So then that's even more offensive. Why is he going to mess up Ben Kingsley's
yeah,
experiment?
Yeah, yeah. No, it was pretty ridiculous. He's like, oh, yeah, it's very good defense mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
It was, yeah, that was a little strange. There was like a group of
I got,
doctors
I put in my
around
notes,
the table.
He's more like Max von Psychoanalyze.
Yep.
Pretty bad.
But yeah, I am glad that doctor was not a huge part of the movie. I think it served almost as like a trigger for his time in the war mm-hmm. a little bit, which I guess I don't know if the movie needed him, frankly.
Yeah.
I think you could have cut 10
you're
minutes
right. that's,
and been
that's,
okay without him.
That was to set his, oh my God, Nazi experimentation doctor alarm bell ringing.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
to me makes him a pretty bad control for this experiment.
It was almost there to just serve the contrivance of this mystery that isn't real.
Yeah.
It was a little strange.
Yeah. Is he real? That's another,
I
guess, open
real.
Question.
Yeah.
Is like maybe he's actually... Leo's just staring at the chair for 30 seconds, you know, there's,
yeah.
he's just going in a psychotic break. Cause is he in any other scene in the movie?
Just
he certainly
two.
Isn't in the climax where they reveal everything in the lighthouse and.
Yeah, he's not, but he gets injected, with the stuff, the sedative or whatever
mm-hmm.
at the end. But yeah, I don't know. I think he could have been removed from the movie. He didn't really need to be there.
I loved all the stuff that they showed in the flashback to the Dachau. I don't think I've heard that pronounced very often.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed.
But he, and I think that is real as well, but there was some doubt, like Ben Kingsley said, I'm not sure if there was actually a massacre of German troops, but you did were part of the liberation of this Nazi death camp. And, you know, I guess that's the other thing. As I was looking at a lot of reviews where, like, people were saying things, like there's one reviewer that says the chilling scene where the Allies round up the Nazi guards and machine gun them reminds us that the Allies weren't necessarily heroes of the war. And I'm like, the fuck are you talking about?
It's
like, I'm not saying that you condone that war crime, but yep. If you can't put yourself in a situation of a liberating Allied officer, and you would be the guy to be like, no, I know we're surrounded by mountains of human misery and death, but yep. Don't be judged. I mean, again, not condone it, but this act like that single act doesn't makes him not a hero. I don't know.
Oh, sure. I
feel like that's a little too
strong. I agree.
It's almost an inhuman thing to expect of someone to come across that kind of industrialized cruelty and not to have that kind of human reaction for justice.
Yeah. And it has parallels with his wife as well, right?
Right.
Like he sees the same massacre essentially on a smaller scale happening here,
right?
And he does the same thing he did with those soldiers, if you believe that flashback,
right?
By killing his wife,
right?
And how can we judge him for that, you know, in a certain way?
Yeah, and that's the other thing, is he, like, I mean, he definitely murdered her, but to me, I guess it seems like the film says the problem is more that he lost his mind as a result of these experiences, not necessarily that the jury was going to throw the fucking book at this guy.
Well, I think it's tied into the final line that he has, which is, you know, essentially, is it
right.
Better to live as a monster or die as a good person?
Right.
And I feel like his wife was essentially asking him to kill her, to release her or whatever. She
says. I think she was asking him to live as a monster. Like, now we've got the perfect life. Let's take them to a picnic and let's.
I think she was very conflicted.
I think she was out of her fucking mind.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think there are moments of lucidity and moments of not lucidity. And she was struggling with that. And I think he almost, you know, kills her. I think he kills her because she, A, he thinks she deserves it, and B, I think he thinks he's doing what she wants him to do and helping her in a weird way. And I think it ties very much into that final line that he has about, you know, she didn't want to live as a monster. And so I think at the end he makes the same choice. Actually, I'm almost certain of it.
Do they hint that she had some kind of underlying trauma too? Because she's the firebug too, right?
She burnt
down the thing. Then they moved out into the country, I guess, to better protect her from, I don't know, whatever stress she's in the city. But they never really talk about the reasons why she had kind of lost her mind or had the psychosis.
Yeah, you're
or
right.
Why Leonardo DiCaprio's character, which is, I guess, is Andrea's real name?
Andrea's his real name.
Okay. And Teddy is his alter ego.
Yeah.
Okay. It was hard for me to keep straight. Why Andrew would be attracted to a person like that? Or I guess, you know, like if he comes back really damaged from the war, maybe he's looking for someone else equally damaged and he got more than he's bargaining for.
Yeah. Yeah. Am I mistaken? Or was there a line in there about something about mental illness being contagious? Is that like a thing that German doctor was hypothesizing or something?
Wasn't that something about that's something that Leo observed? Like, you guys act like mental because they were trying to keep him at arm's length from everything and they
right.
wouldn't let him. And like,
right.
So
I wonder if that's part of what they're trying to say is that like they both fed into each other. So he comes back with PTSD. She's already got some issues and they both kind of
could
feed off of each other.
Because I know literally, like, if you know, if they're doing it as a theme, that's one thing, but like,
right.
really, mental illness is not
yeah.
contagious.
It's not a disease you're going to catch.
No.
Unless it's some kind of crazy brain worm.
It's and true.
Then you can.
Mad cow.
Yeah. Then it might work to actually go into the brain and pull it out.
Yeah. But I all the stuff that, like, just a really grim scenes from the concentration camp stuck out to me. The German officer tried to kill himself on the floor and didn't quite get the job done. That was, and the way that is told, like, again and again, and you get it felt very dreamlike in that you get us out of context of what he's doing and like these images of these frozen corpses, and you see the guy twitching on the ground, and they keep coming back to that five or six times and developing that. I really liked how that gave you, whether you thought that he was a U.S. Marshal trying to get to the bottom of this or whether you thought he's a crazy person, it's hard not to pity him. Even before you get to the part where he loses his wife and children in one terrible, terrible day.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, the delusion here, you know, that there's some horrible experimentation going on at this facility is not wrong in the end, right?
Well,
I mean, in my opinion, he's taken off to be lobotomized at the end of this.
I think he's volunteering because I don't think he lost. So here, like, let's just talk about the ending.
That's fair.
I think we're going to have to backtrack and talk about more stuff, but you know, I detest doing the whole, let's talk about that later. So what do you think happened at the end?
He basically 100% certain that, he regains his sanity, and while he has, you know, his wits about him, he makes the decision not to live as a monster, and he has them lobotomize him.
So he does. So he fakes his mental illness just so that he can hit the reset button on himself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I think too.
And I think it's almost obvious to the point of being unquestionable because of that final line, which I guess wasn't even in the books or the book rather.
Well, so that's the other thing. I think that some people, I understand that the book, it's actually way heavier towards he had a final relapse.
Huh.
And it's more tragic that way,
which
I don't like. I mean, I haven't read the book. I don't know. Like, I don't know how different their book is from the movie. But to me, if just evaluating those twists on the face of it, I think the movie ending is more poignant.
I do too.
A man who, you know, is fully conscious and decides, like, he has a moment of lucidity and he decides that he doesn't want to live as this person anymore.
Yeah. He's a tortured soul and he wants to be free of it.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting because, the people in the movie understand, like Ben Kingsley and Mark Ruffalo understand that lobotomy is butchery.
Yeah.
They're one of the few, it seems, but they're wanting to pioneer these other. So it's kind of interesting in that this guy to essentially commit suicide, he might have doomed many, many other patients that otherwise could have been helped to being lobotomized, because now these guys' research is going to be discredited.
Yeah, they failed.
Sets them back decades. And I think that's another level of poignancy, too. That, you know, is he a hero or a monster?
Is he a sympathetic figure?
You can't
be blamed. You know?
You can't blame a person for breaking under a weight that they can't hold, right?
Yeah, sure.
But it's also another. I think it's grist for the mill.
It is, and I remember being super confused by the ending of this movie the first time through.
Right.
But having watched it a second time, I have no idea why.
Yeah,
because it seems so straightforward.
I think it's because they pitched that, like, up until the lighthouse scene, I was convinced that. I mean, there was a lot of things that were, like, weird. Like, how's this lady camping out in this cave, and she's got a fire going, and you can see it from, like, these people aren't trying that hard to find her. And this is other little weird things that, like, just weren't adding up. But I was convinced that he was a marshal that was there, and they've pulled one under on him. And, you know, this is a government conspiracy, and he's asked too many questions, and he's effed it up. And this other guy's a political dissident that he knew on the outside. And Rorschach from The Watchmen. And it when the lighthouse came, were you the same way? And I feel like the lighthouse is such a 180 that the film takes, and then it's over in 5 minutes.
It is, yeah.
Like, there's not a whole lot of, like, time to reflect on that. So I kind of feel like that's where you just never get your footing back until it's over.
Yeah, they sort of just kick you out the door with that final line, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, here, okay, just think about this for a while on your way home.
And I still, because I thought that, but I was looking at the final scene where they're marching off to the lighthouse, and I'm like, so they convinced me that this was all in his head and that he's now making the note. But I'm like, wait a minute. I was just in that lighthouse.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have any medical equipment. It's just an old abandoned lighthouse. So is he really lost? Is like, is this like a double, triple? But I think that's just and I also read something on Reddit where I guess there's two different lighthouses. There's a lighthouse that you see as you're approaching the island, and it's a different one from the rest of the implying okay. that when he went through the lighthouse, he either went through a different one or he went through it in a altered state and didn't recognize it for what it was, which I would believe.
Right, because, you know, the whole time, I mean, that's something that they touch on is the idea that you could be at this mental facility, this prison, and actually not even know you're there, mm-hmm. you know, like think you're somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So if you were at a lighthouse or if you were, you know, in the doctor's office mm-hmm. and you thought you were at a lighthouse, that's conceivable within the framework of this movie.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot of other shady shit, like they were forced to wear these orderly uniforms, which seemed in their clothes, and they're forced to smoke their these smokes, and they're forced to take this medicine, and I thought that was all very suggestive that he was actually onto something. I didn't account for how unreliable a narrator that he was. Like, totally. I didn't think that he was going to be deluded from the second he sits on. But there's I read this fairly persuasive essay that I think is more like it's persuasive in the loose change sense of the word.
Okay.
Like, if you consider these 50 interconnected facts, it's like, hey, you know, maybe the 9/11 buildings didn't. It's sort of something fishy there. But then you're like, wait a second. None of this hangs together as a consistent thesis. Mm-hmm. But this guy had this thing about, like, it's significant that Teddy, this gun didn't have a holster, and Mark Ruffalo's gun did. And then when they offer him the gun at the end, it had a holster, which shows that they gave him a fake planted gun and it wasn't as real. And
totally.
There was all this stuff, but I feel like in the end, it's like, no, that's that you're still barking up the wrong tree. I think the correct interpretation is that he was deluded from the very beginning of this was all an engineered setting, and
it was completely. It's all for him. I mean, when he goes to visit George Noyce in the Ward C mm-hmm. or whatever, mm-hmm. and he says this is all for you. You're a rat in a maze,
right? Yeah, no,
I mean, that's it's the movie tipping its hand, you know.
Yes,
it's blatant.
Yes, yes. Once you know the secret, it's
it is
blatant.
I guess that's why I say it's heavy handed, because if you know the secret, it's very obvious.
There's a couple other themes I thought were interesting. A lot of angst about the atomic bomb.
Oh, yeah.
That was brought up again and again and again. And what do you think that had to do with anything?
I'm not really sure.
The other thing that while you're pondering that, I want to hit you with another one. I thought that it means something that Teddy / Andrew is presented with this choice where he thinks he's on two different missions. There's the one mission where, you know, he's trying to expose this place for the lie that it is and this un-American thing, and they're doing testing on people and they're no better than Nazis. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing he's supposed to do is kill his wife's killer.
Right.
What did he end up – were those actually thematic choices that we're supposed to map into the choices he made at the end, or are those just part of his delusion and they don't bear further scrutiny? Because I was trying to think, like, okay, if he kills his wife's killer, then he was there to commit suicide. And that's what his wife's ghost delusion was there to encourage him to stay on that mission.
But maybe not like a literal suicide, maybe more like killing this thing, this PTSD combined with, you know, the guilt and weight of mm-hmm. having killed your wife and her having killed the children. Like, I think essentially like getting rid of the thing that is destroying his mind.
Huh. Because the way I saw it is like both of those things led to the same end, which is him being lobotomized and destroyed. Like, if he sticks to the delusions where he's still a hero and he's investigating this thing, then they're going to lobotomize him. Whereas if he kills his wife's killer, but I guess if you're saying that's even more metaphorical, killing his wife's killer
would cure whatever is
inside him that causes him to do. But there again, like the. I mean,
but he resists that mission the whole time, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think that's to say, you know, his mind doesn't want to let go of this.
Hmm. Yeah, because he says, I always thought when he said, "Look, I've had enough killing," that I always thought he was lying.
Uh-huh.
In the first time, that's something he wants to be true. But if he ever gets his hands on his wife's killer, it's going to be go time. I don't know. I thought both of those things, the atomic bomb and those two paths, I was trying to figure out what other meaning they had in.
Yeah, I don't know about the bomb. I mean, really just about the atrocities of that war.
Well, it could just also be that's part of the zeitgeist, right? You know, like we dropped the bomb on Japan, and there was a – I don't know exactly what time frame. Like this was in the probably early to mid-50s. But, you know, we were in a nuclear race with the Russians, and there was all this atomic testing, and that was like, you know, that was of that time.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't know how much other to talk about this, because my experience was as a person who it's like if you told me to review The Prestige for the first time, I would have a completely different review with probably much more to say. If you tell me to review The Prestige the second time, it's more like, oh, I see. I know what the trick is. And sure enough, the trick tracks clean through the movie. Mm-hmm. And there you go. QED.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do think The Prestige, speaking of movies with twists that are watchable, I feel like The Prestige is one of those ones that is.
Yeah.
I've seen it like 3 times, and I feel like I could see it a couple more.
I mean, this was totally watchable. I don't want to like say, you know, if you know the secret, it's a bad movie. Well, I don't think so. It is enjoyable to go through and kind of track, you know, each of the storylines.
Just like it is Memento. I'm just saying, like, Inception is not a – like, I'm actually probably in the mood to watch Inception again because it's been 5-6 years.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like it's not a movie where I can get absorbed and just lost in the artistry, because here's a couple other things. Like, I thought him embracing his wife till she turned to ash and blew away.
Yeah.
Didn't hold up. I don't know if – I can't even remember thinking if it worked in the original. But, like, when I saw it, I'm like, that – I mean, I know what they're trying to do, but I felt it looked pretty fakey.
Do you know what this Law of Four thing was all about?
No.
It's brought up multiple times, and one of the doctors seems to think it is super clever. It's also mentioned when he's showing him that the names are anagrams of each other. And I have no idea what the Law of Four means. Right, because
there's four there that he was split that his name into four different names? Characters.
Four characters?
Yeah, the missing woman.
Okay.
And so you had Andrew and Teddy.
Yeah.
And then the missing woman, and then who was the fourth one? Because they drew that that matrix. But that his wife's not an anagram of herself, is it?
Yeah, it was her maiden name was it was Dolores like Chanel or something, and the other woman's name was Rachel something, I don't know.
Huh.
Had all the same letters.
Okay. So is that the rule? Because it means like they, because I was less interested in the mystery of that paper when it seemed like the you know, patient 65 or whatever, like that was, or 66, was it 66?
67. 66. Yeah. Who is 67?
That was explained entirely within the movie. So like, I didn't think about the rule of four.
Let me ask you this. We go through the whole movie where Leonardo DiCaprio has a Band-Aid on his head and later in the movie we see underneath it, it sort of looks like an incision, possible incision. Do we think that he has already been quote-unquote experimented on?
See, like, when I was watching this movie for the second time, and I was like, I noticed that Band-Aid right away, and I'm like, am I remembering, because is the twist that he's, or is it, because the other thing that you can't help but think about of this movie, if you've seen, is Sucker Punch, which is a shitty, inferior movie in every single way.
Man, I don't remember.
Because that was all about a woman who's living in a delusion, and she gets, she gets lobotomized by John Hamm at the end of the movie. right after he tries to sell her on John Hamm's John Hamm. And she's like, no, I'd rather have a lobotomy. And... where was I going with that? Oh, I was thinking as he's riding across the ferry, I'm like, is the whole deal that he's already been lobotomized and this is his, like, fucking fever dream? Because I couldn't quite remember what the twist was.
Same here.
But, yeah, that's weird, like,
so we know that
foreshadowing.
Yeah.
like a times a flat circle is kind of a foreshadowing.
Maybe it's just that. So we know he's been a patient for 2 years, right?
Uh-huh.
Maybe during that time he has been experimented on, and I get the impression that, you know, Ben Kingsley has not been his doctor the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Not even close. I mean, this Sheehan guy has been. Ed Sheeran has been his doctor the whole time.
Yep, that's the problem.
that'll drive anyone crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe during Ed Sheeran's time as his doctor, we know he was on pills. We know he was on medication. He might have also been operated on. a little bit, just a little, just scrape out some of those nerves.
That's a lobotomy thing.
Yeah.
Like that's what I'm saying. Like that's.
Why re-lobotomize him if it didn't work the first time?
The first lobotomy didn't take, so let's run him through again. I
don't know what else. Like, is it from
his
violence?
Maybe I'll have to watch this movie a third time.
I mean, maybe it's from his violence, right? They talk about like how he assaults guards and how he beat up Noyce. And
did he get a cut like when he struggled with his wife or in the war? Like, is
I mean that was all 2 years ago.
Yeah, why, yeah.
He's been a patient for 2 years. So I think it might have been in the fight with
Noyce. Fight with Rorschach.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
It would.
Because he got pretty fucked up in that.
He did. Rorschach did. He sure did.
Yeah, that's another great. That was another great performance.
He's looking like the Rat King.
That whole speech, like you know, the or not? I guess it would. What would you call that? The scene with two people. Just a scene. That scene.
Dialogue?
Yeah, that scene with them in the cell where he was talking about being a rat in a cage, that was that was really great. That was really great, too.
It was, yeah.
Shall we get to... we just have one piece of feedback, but it's a doozy.
Okay.
We might have to pause the podcast to think about it. Anne from Cali had a quick question. Where does Shutter Island rank on your favorite Leonardo roles and Martin movies lists? Ranking is... Especially with something like Scorsese, who... I have not seen the vast majority of his catalog. I'm going through his filmography. I've seen Taxi Driver. I've seen Raging Bull.
I have never seen Raging Bull. I've seen Taxi Driver.
I've not seen The Color of Money, but I want to.
So good.
I've not seen The Last Temptation of Christ. I've, of course, seen Goodfellas and Cape Fear. I've seen Casino. That's where he tried to get Al Pacino and he got Robert De Niro instead. We called it Casino.
Same bringing out the dead. He never worked with Nicolas Cage again. Never.
I don't think I've seen Bringing Out the Dead. I have seen Gangs of New York and Aviator, The Departed, Shutter Island. I haven't seen Hugo. I've seen The Wolf of Wall Street.
So okay, let's do this. Here are specifically the Martin Scorsese movies. Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio movies that this is worse than.
Okay.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Is worse than Shutter Island?
No. The Shutter Island is worse than.
Okay. So these are all that are better than. Okay. Yes. Gotcha.
Wolf of Wall Street.
All right.
Do you agree?
I agree.
Okay.
Certainly more enjoyable.
All right. Yeah, I agree. The Aviator.
Yes.
Okay. The Departed.
I don't think The Departed's that great.
I think I'm with you on that. Nicholson's accent alone knocks it down a peg.
Yeah.
But
I understand why people love The Departed. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad film, and that's part of the problem is when I finally got to see it, I was so friggin' hyped to see Jack Nicholson and this gangster movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and everybody's in that. Like, Matt Damon's in that.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin Scorsese's directing.
And Mark Wahlberg. And like
Mark Wahlberg. And it just, I don't felt like.
Alec Baldwin.
But, you know, everyone talked about Jack Nicholson. Like, he's this, like, great, like, villain. And I never really took him that seriously. He seemed like a parody of himself.
Yeah, I'm kind
of
with you.
I will admit that I have a glaring hole of, like, Jack Nicholson roles. Like, I never saw, like, maybe One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Is the only like Jack Nicholson in his prime, like A Few Good Men. Even then he's kind of past prime, but like I've seen As Good as It Gets, where he's just, right. You know, like that's just not, and I saw that when I was a like, you know, late teenager, in my mom and dad's living room. Like, why did I don't
is
get
that
this.
The one where he's like
got Helen Hunt,
50-year-old,
yeah,
like
he's fooling,
playboy.
He's fooling the one gay guy's dog into liking him because he's got bacon in his pocket. There's all kinds of things going on there.
He took a De Niro turn at some point.
But that so I don't know whether when people say, oh, he's so good in The Departed, is that because they're laying over all the other great roles they've seen him in and they're taking that respect into it or right. not? Because like I said, I've seen The Shining and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest as like that's my breadth and depth of like classic Nicholson in his prime kind of performances.
Yeah, and I would say The Departed is not one of those.
So yeah, I don't think The Departed is as good.
Same here. How about Gangs of New York? You know, I've seen that movie one time, and I barely remember it.
Yeah, and my gut says that I think it would be a more rewarding rewatch. But I'd say that they're kind of like you're getting to its level. Mm-hmm. But like, no way is it better than Casino. No way is it better than Goodfellas.
Oh, no. I mean, those aren't even close.
No way is as good as DiCaprio. Taxi Driver or Raging Bull. Yeah. So, like, I think it doesn't even make Scorsese's top five.
It's not even as good as The Color of Money. Not even close.
I'm seeing that one. I think it's like the just misses the cutoff of his top five.
Yeah.
Leo probably is in his top five.
You think so?
What's
the performance
better?
Was that strong for you? I think The Aviator is a better performance.
Okay, there's one.
It's a more broad performance, and I don't mean that in the negative way.
Did you see The Revenant?
I did see The Revenant, yeah.
What did you think of The Revenant?
It is a little, like, torture porny for me.
It is very torture porny.
But the performance he delivers is, it's primal.
It drives me crazy when people say that he wasn't given much to do. That's like saying Tom Hanks wasn't given a lot to do in Castaway.
Right.
Like, all of his work is nonverbal and very primal,
uh-huh.
Which is why I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
Now,
I just think it's tough to get there in front of a camera.
I also think I'm sympathetic to people to say that Tom Hardy was better or as good because he was really, really good, but in a much smaller role, too. Like, he wasn't on the screen for an hour and a half with his guts hanging out from a grizzly bear attack. So,
yeah. He was detestable in a lot of ways. And also, kind of understandable,
sure,
like relatable in a weird way too.
Yes, like
I think both those performances worked really, really well.
So I think I just want to check this with you because I think the Revenant is in his top five. Have you seen Who's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Maybe everyone, a long time ago.
I have not, and everyone says how amazing Leonardo is at such a young age in that movie.
Yeah, how about Basketball Diaries?
I haven't seen that movie.
I think Wolf of Wall Street, he's outstanding.
I blame him for Columbine, all I know.
Django Unchained, he's outstanding.
Yeah, he's really good. So, I don't know if this movie cracks the top five of Leo.
I think he's better in this, maybe, than he is in Inception. I think that performance doesn't have as much to work with.
Well, here's the thing. The best scene in this movie is him shrieking about his children.
Yeah.
The best scene of Inception is when his wife jumps out the window and his immediate reaction on that.
But he doesn't get to, like, play the confusion and the desperation the way that he does here. I mean, I don't know. He comes off more as, like, the fixer
true.
Kind of guy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the only time he's confused is when he's crawling around in limbo.
Right.
With you know, the old Japanese guy.
yeah.
So, but yeah, I
don't know. Catch Me If You Can. I love that movie.
I love that movie, too.
I'm trying to remember how good the performance is from Leo, but I don't know.
I mean, that's the other thing is, like, Leonardo's got, like, movie star roles, like the Titanic, and I feel like Catch Me If You Can is one of those, and he's got like auteur works,
like The Aviator,
like and The Revenant, and this, where, like, I think you almost have to judge them separately,
yeah,
because you've got, like, you know, popcorn and fun Leo, and then you've got, like, I'm trying to win an Oscar here Leo.
Yep.
But no, I feel like that this is just narrowly misses both the gentlemen's top five.
He's in Critters 3 as well.
What?
Yeah, Critters 3. He plays Josh. 1991.
Oh my god.
He was probably like 8 years old.
Oh my god.
Nope. He would have been 17.
Ah, so he's just working on his guilt. He's working on eating Gilbert Grape around there, huh?
He was 19 in What's Eating Gilbert Grape. Not that young. Get out of here.
He was? Because I thought he was like 15 or 16.
No, he was 19.
Still 19? 19-year-old doing that kind of work?
Yeah.
If it's as advertised.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Okay, so what else do we have? I mean, that's kind of all I have to talk about.
Yeah, same here.
I feel like we've appropriately put it into pantheon. Reasonable people can disagree.
Yeah, it'd,
like,
be interesting to hear
if you
the
say this is your favorite Scorsese movie. I think that would raise my eyebrows, but I wouldn't be like, you goddamn fool.
Or
if you say it's in the top five, I would easily believe you on that.
Yeah.
And really, it's only the existence of, like, the classic Scorsese, like the Casinos and the Goodfellas and the Taxi Drivers that would like kind of have me raising eyebrows about Shutter Island. Because it's not bad. Mm-hmm. It's just not, like, you know, those movies are, I mean, those movies are part of the pantheon. Like, those are all in the AFI top 100. I don't think Shutter Island is going to crack that list.
No.
So, no. There we go. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Is this the first Scorsese flick that we've done? I think it might be.
Yeah, as I can remember, sure.
That's kind of insane. I mean, we've gotten Kubrick, we've gotten Spielberg, we've gotten Lucas, we've gotten Nolan a couple times.
Yep.
Trying to think of like other
Ridley Scott, I think.
Ridley Scott, we did Aliens. Sure. Yep. We've done both of the Andersons.
Wait.
Have we done a Wes Anderson? No, we did a Paul Thomas Anderson.
Did we
Anderson.
Do Alien or Aliens? Because Aliens is not Ridley Scott. Aliens is James Cameron.
Well, we also
Cameron.
Did both Prometheus and...
those are first-run movies, though, right?
Oh, well, I'm not talking about... I'm just talking about bald movies.
Period. Yeah, totally. We've covered them. And Cameron, we've done a lot of.
Yeah, I wonder what other great actor or what other great directors we haven't touched on yet.
Have we done Edgar Wright? We're about to.
Yeah, we're about
soon.
To. I feel like we did Shaun of the Dead. Okay. That was an early commission.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is super boring. I'm just padding out the podcast. Special thanks again to all of our community commissioners. They banded together on our shopping cart, and they chipped in a couple shares at a time and made this happen, made this commission podcast happen. Special thanks to Ty, Anne from Cali, Portman, Shinson90, Space Dog 128, which is an upgrade over to 64-bit version for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Andrew T., V. Westervelt, Moni 6626, McJacina 66, Lara KM, Betmark, Coco 2MC, and LSB Golf 77. Thanks again. We couldn't do Bald Movie without you guys' support. We've got another fun one. We actually have a really, really fun lineup, but the next one is Dr. Horrible's Sing Along Blog.
Yeah, that should be good.
Which I think Shum, our buddy that did the Vampire Slayer, Buffy the Vampire Slayer episodes, he came back with that one.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to be a fun one to review. That'll be coming up in the next week or two. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
I'll see you later.